Good morning. My name is Tim Webster, and I represent petitioner Honeywell International, Inc. With me at council table are Chet Thompson and Bob Myers, who represent petitioner DuPont. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court, you have before you today a live dispute concerning EPA action taken in 2008 that is unlawfully costing the petitioners tens of millions of dollars today in lost sales and revenue, and which provide them competitor standing for this challenge. That action was EPA's approval of the inviolate transfer of baseline rights to produce or import certain hydrochlorofluorocarbon chemicals, known as HCFCs, in a closed market that is a zero-sum game system. In fact, the zero-sum nature of the HCFC marketplace is exactly the reason EPA's approval of these interpollutant transfers in 2008 was and remains today so harmful to the petitioners. Key to petitioners' challenge today is the court's 2010 decision, authored by Judge Brown, in Arkema versus EPA. That decision is central to petitioners' claims in at least three respects. First, it makes clear that the injury petitioners are suffering today and that forms the basis of their competitor standing, and that injury was caused by the 2008 approvals, not any subsequent agency action. Second, it ripened petitioners' claims and thus provided a jurisdictional basis for the challenges before you today. Third, it provides a basis for petitioners' due process claim.
Why isn't the interim final rule the basis of your injury?
It isn't the basis of our injury, Your Honor, because it did not cause the diminution in market share that petitioners have suffered. Let me take one step back. With the 2008 approvals that EPA accomplished, as interpreted by the court in Arkema, Arkema and Solvay were able to aggrandize their share of the HCFC marketplace by 16% to the detriment of Honeywell, DuPont, and other market participants who lost 16%. That approval locked in, because of the zero-sum nature of the overall marketplace system, the injury to petitioners. The 2011 interim final rule flashed into existence for 4.5 months at the end of 2011, and in fact, by its own terms, is no longer in effect. It could no more be the basis for ripeness of this case today or for injury today than any other prior agency action that's already been extinguished.
Could you have challenged it then?
By the time of the 2011 interim final rule, we had already filed this case. Certainly, we could have filed a subsequent petition for review, but since we already had this one on file, there was no need to file anything else. Our beef wasn't with the interim final rule. Our beef was with the 2008 transfers. Those were the approvals that EPA made that inexorably caused the injury that we are suffering today and continue to suffer.
Well, EPA takes the position that after our decision in Arkema, it had to decide what to do, and it considered five different options. And it says, had it adopted one of those options, namely the auction approach, your client may well have benefited. So that up until the interim rule, your baselines remain the same.
Well, Your Honor, it is correct that the baseline remains the same, but the baseline doesn't govern the market share. The zero-sum game nature of the system does. But to go back and take your question in two parts there, EPA has not, subsequent to the Arkema panel decision, proposed any other regime other than the pre-existing one. The EPA statement that there could be some other system, like an auction system, those were considerations that were made in the notice of proposed rulemaking that led up to the rule that was actually at issue in Arkema, not subsequently. The 2011 interim final rule was a good cause rule issued under the APA without any notice or comment, and the appending notice of proposed rulemaking, which is part of the remand from the court's prior decision, and which has not yet been promulgated as a final rule, does not propose any other system as well. So
but
for the
Arkema leaves open to the agency several options it could follow.
Not in our reading of it, Your Honor, and perhaps that's something this panel could clarify, but the Arkema court says specifically that EPA retains the prospective authority to change the interpollutant transfer regulations to say that interpollutant transfers in the future will not necessarily be permanent. The Arkema court says absolutely nothing about whether EPA can switch to a wholly different system. And in fact, it's not at all clear that EPA can. The ARCMA panel decision stands for the proposition that all market participants, including the petitioners here, have vested rights in their baseline that cannot be retroactively diminished by EPA. It's not
clear. Let me ask you, maybe I've misread ARCMA, but given that this is, as you put it, a zero-sum game, and under the Montreal Protocol, we're headed towards zero or close to it, anything anyone had is ultimately going to diminish at some point. So ARCMA has to be read in that context, doesn't it?
Well, under the current scheme, EPA has exercised a statutory authority to accelerate the phase-out of the HCFC-22s, and they'll be phased out essentially by 2020. But that's 8 more years of injury for petitioners. Mm-hmm. And according to the declarations that we filed to substantiate standing, it's tens of millions of dollars worth of injury that will be suffering and have been suffering during this period of time until that phase-out is complete. There's no evidence right now that EPA is going to change fundamentally the allocation system based on what it has actually done through the exercise of enforcement discretion, through the interim final rule, and through the notice of proposed rulemaking. There's no reason to
wait. For 2012 in the future?
For 2012, that's correct. 2012 through 14, right, which would get us to the end of the current regulatory period. Mm-hmm. So for these reasons, we think it's clear that petitioners have competitor standing, certainly consistent with the decision in Shirley versus Sebelius, with which both Judges Brown and Kavanaugh joined. There, two doctors' competitive interests had been harmed by Health and Human Services guidelines on stem cell research, exposing them to increased grant competition. The court did not make those doctors wait until a grant application had actually been denied in order to manifest their injury. Here, by contrast, we're even a step better than the position of the plaintiffs in that prior case. We have the injury which occurred in 2008 through EPA's actions, which inexorably changed the dimensions and the proportions of the market, and we have various evidence today in 2012 in the form of EPA's exercise of enforcement discretion that permits all of the market participants to manufacture and import, but continues the ARCMA and Solvay baseline that was found in the prior ARCMA court decision.
If we get to the merits, are you really just challenging ARCMA?
No, Your Honor. Matter of fact, we have four legal arguments here that were not raised in the prior ARCMA decision, as evidenced by the fact that EPA here opposes them. First, we raise a Chevron 1 argument, which was not clearly decided by the prior court.
But resolving it on that ground would require us to do something, seems to me, directly inconsistent in result with ARCMA.
Well, as a matter of...
tough for us to do as a panel, for sure.
Perhaps. The court has done many tough things in the past, and as a matter of fundamental fairness, the petitioner sitting here today had no opportunity in an adversarial setting to raise and litigate that issue. This case is their opportunity. We think there is a colorable Chevron Step 1 argument. We've laid it out. I'm happy to go through and explain it, but we ought to have the opportunity.
I understand it. It's just, and I've thought about it, and you make some good points, I think, but it does seem to me at the end it would require, I was using tough maybe as a euphemism for improper, for us as a panel to get to a result that would be necessarily inconsistent with what ARCMA did.
I think that's not correct in the sense, first of all, improper I think goes way too far. If you analogize this to the law of collateral estoppel, for example, which is not a defense that any of the parties in the case raised, but in collateral estoppel you look for issue preclusion, whether the precise issue was actually litigated before. None of our four issues were, in our view. And there's also a prong of that test which looks to the fundamental unfairness of binding a non-party to a prior case to the decision of
Well, that's true in a lot of our cases, as you're well aware. That's why we have amicus briefs. And
But in this one, the petitioners never had that opportunity. Furthermore, if you get to the due process claim, which I think is rarely raised in the administrative context, because usually the administrative procedures themselves are that proxy for due process, but here they have failed us. Here we have a situation
Sorry to interrupt, but you had said there were four arguments. Is this a due process one of them?
Due process, the Chevron one, mm-hmm. the phase down follows the pollutant principle, mm-hmm. and the lack of sufficient administrative record are, in fact, the four arguments that we raise here that were not specifically addressed by the Arkema court.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So due process, then?
Yes, Your Honor. Here, the 2008 transfers fundamentally and axiomatically changed the proportions of the market here. They took away what had previously been given to the petitioners without offering any due process. This is similar to the Vell versus Burstyn case the Supreme Court handled many years ago. Admittedly, it was a driver's license case, but it said that states can impose restrictions on who gets a driver's license in first place. You can condition it on various factors, but once you've given one, you have to afford due process before you can just take it away. And in our case, we didn't have that.
Well, EPA promulgated the 2003 rule, and prior to that, everybody had a chance to comment on it. And it provided that the notice of approval of an allocation would be by email to the requester. So everybody was on notice how these things were going to happen.
We don't contest the 2003 rule, and we don't think that EPA did anything unlawful within the context of that regulatory time period, 2003
to 2009.
No,
but that's your argument that you didn't know about it, and you didn't have a chance to contest it.
We did not know about the 2008 transfers. They were not told to petitioners in any respect.
I know, but my point is that the regulatory scheme set up in the 2003 rule allowed that, and everybody knew it. And your clients and the both clients here, you know, sophisticated players in this particular market.
But the 2003 rule was only, to our knowledge, good for transfers that were made within that time, within that regulatory period of 2003 to 2009. For example, Arkema and Solvay had allowances in 2003 for each of those subsequent years through 2009. They could perfectly have lawfully have transferred anything between companies and between pollutants within that time period. We had no notice from EPA that it would be doing permanent transfers that would carry forward into subsequent regulatory periods.
And that came from the court decision, right?
That did come from a court decision. I see that my time is up, Your Honor, and I would like to reserve some time for
Good.
Rebuttal. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning. Perry Rosen from the Department of Justice. With me is Diane McConkey from EPA and Dan Himmelfarb for the interveners sitting at our table. Petitioners in their reply brief state, and I quote, at least five post-Arkema EPA actions have harmed petitioners here. We don't necessarily dispute that, but none of those are before this court. The only action that's before this court is a pre-Arkema decision. It is the 208 approvals. At least six times in petitioner's brief, they stated that their injury is an economic injury from lost allowances, and that did not occur until the interim final rule was issued 3.5 years later. Petitioners failed to challenge the IFR, the interim final rule, and so they try and come at it through the back door now challenging the 2008 approvals. They say that the 2008 approvals will lead to an injury inevitably. Well, first of all, that's not the standard for an injury in fact. It has to lead to injury imminently. And it clearly did not lead to injury imminently because it took 3.5 years before a single allowance was taken away from petitioners as a result of the Arkema decision.
Well, their argument is that Arkema changed the rules of the game. Everybody was happy, so to speak, with what was going on, and then Arkema came along and said no. You know, these interpollutant allocations are going to be carried forward.
Arkema changed the rules of the game for two companies based on the specific facts there, based on the specific communications that EPA made to those two companies. But in any case, the injury, even if it changed the rules, the injury, which is, again, taking away the allowances from the petitioners, still was not inevitable. EPA had many options to go. We laid out those five different options they looked at in the 2010 rule. For instance, the auction system. There is no baseline in an auction system. Mm-hmm. There's no basis to carry forward a baseline from a 2008 approval when you go to an auction system.
I think counsel's response was, well, all of that was before Arkema.
That may be true. But that doesn't change the fact that Arkham had defined that the interveners had certain rights. But as going forward, EPA did not have to apply those rights in a way that injured the petitioners. They could, for instance, in an auction system, we're talking about the two largest companies here, and I think Ackerman may be the third largest company. They may be greatly advantaged by an auction system. Another system was based on recent sales data. There have been companies that have dropped out of this system. Under this present baseline system, they still hold on to those baselines, and they can sell those baselines to other companies. Now, maybe that doesn't make sense in going forward. So EPA could have reconsidered that and said, we're going to base it on recent sales data, and it may have been these companies who would have been advantaged as a result of the Archimedes decision. So until that injury shows up, there's no standing there.
On Arkema, obviously your brief is interestingly worded on Arkema, and you disagree with the decision, which makes me wonder, what are a couple questions. What are the problems what do you want us to do about that, first of all, if anything?
That's a good question.
Or what are you going to seek? Are you going to ask the Supreme Court to do something about that? Or maybe that's premature to know what you're planning on that.
We petitioned for en banc on Arkema, and that was denied. We were most concerned about the potential ramifications on a due process claim, that not be limited. We think it's limited to specific facts of that case.
You don't think Arkema has problems from EPA's perspective going forward?
We do not, as long as it is limited to that specific factual situation. If Arkema is interpreted in a way that gives vested rights to anyone, any party who's held an allowance, then that is a significant...
That condition you've superimposed on it wasn't evident in the text of the court decision, right?
That may be true. That may be true, yes. And
so if it's read more broadly, or just read just as written, EPA has a problem with it?
If it's read more broadly, EPA does have a problem with that.
But you're taking it as a given for this case.
That it'd be read in a restricted way?
No, taking it as a given that we obviously, in your brief, you many times say you don't really agree with Arkema, but...
We don't agree with Arkema, but we're here. We abide by the Arkema decision.
Right. And but you, in your brief, you says unless the court limits Arkema. And so this is your limitation?
Yes, yes.
The limitation, spell it out for me so I'm clear.
The limitation is that the vested rights that were found in Arkema belong to those two companies based on the specific communications and assurances that EPA made to those two companies.
This seems like there might have been a broader principle enunciated in the court decision.
Well, if this court interprets that as a broader principle, that allowances create vested rights entitlements that EPA is not permitted to take away in any shape or form, then the whole program could come crumbling down.
But that was my whole point, is that doesn't Arkema have to be read in the context of this Montreal Protocol, a limited market that is shrinking? Otherwise, the United States won't be able to comply with it.
Yes. I would agree with that. That is certainly one way to read it.
If that were correct,
yes,
then how does EPA understand intervenors' rights after Arkema?
We understand their rights, again, based on the communications that we made to them, and what we did in the interim final rule is allocate to them the extra baseline that this court said that they were entitled to.
And so when you reach the next period, what happens?
Well, again, we still have options to change the whole system and take the baseline out. What's that?
If you stick with the 2003 rulemaking system.
If we stick with the baseline system, for instance, our proposed rule for 2012 to 2014, we propose to basically, it's a proposed rule, and the proposal is to continue to represent and reflect those transferred allocations going forward. We think we can do that in the context of the entire system and make sure the system doesn't come crashing down, mm-hmm. that the baselines for all of the other companies remain the same, and that we will be able to phase out these allowances based on that. We had to make some adjustments, obviously, and that did lower the percentage of the baseline used by the other companies.
When you do that, presumably there are going to be challenges based on ARCMA.
There probably are, but that gets back to when you can make those challenges, and you can make those challenges when you're actually injured by that, when your actual allowances or allocations are changed. And clearly that did not happen in this case until the 2011 interim final rule occurred. I see my time is up. The question about EPA, what EPA wants here is, first of all, what EPA wants is not to be challenged for every simple administrative decision, adjudicative decision it makes through these programs. It wants to, it knows that it can be subject to challenge for its actions, but when those actions actually affect parties, for instance, in the interim final rule. Beyond that, notwithstanding the fact that we disagreed with the ARCMA case's decision, and it would be nice to reverse that and vindicate ourselves, I think it's time to move forward, and that's EPA's proposal.
With a narrower interpretation.
With that narrow interpretation.
That's important for you, right?
That is critical for us, yes.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Council for interveners.
Thank you, Judge Rogers, and may it please the court. The government and interveners make a number of jurisdictional arguments, but the most basic one is that the time to challenge the approvals was when EPA issued the interim final rule in 2011. That was the first and so far only agency action that gave effect to the transfers by carrying them forward into the next regulatory period, and it's therefore the only agency action that could have injured petitioners. Petitioners did file a petition for review of the interim final rule, but they filed it 2 days too late and ultimately dismissed it. Any earlier challenge would be premature. That includes the challenge that is before this court, which was brought in response to the 2010 decision in ARCMA. ARCMA no more injured petitioners than did the approvals themselves, because it did not require EPA to carry forward the transfers unless it chose to adopt the same system that it had applied in the prior regulatory period. EPA ultimately did decide to do that, but it didn't decide to do that until 2011 with the issuance of the interim final rule. And as I've said,
wasn't it very likely that EPA was going to continue the same system forward from everyone in the marketplace? Yeah, well, there's always a chance, of course.
Right. I don't know that I would say very likely. I can't ascribe a percentage to it. I don't think anyone could, but I definitely agree with the government that basic principles of Article III under basic principles of Article III standings, it's not enough that it's possible or likely or maybe even very likely, and I certainly don't want to concede that that's the case here. The government and interveners.
Their injury, they say, comes about from a combination of the prior agency action plus the court decision, and those two things together create their injury.
It's actually neither of those things that creates their injury. What creates their injury is the interim final rules decision to carry them forward. And this seems as good a time as any to address what exactly it was that ARCMA did. There was some colloquy between the court and my friend Mr. Rosen about whether ARCMA has to be interpreted broadly or narrowly. It seems to us the holding of ARCMA is quite clear. There's no need to interpret it narrowly or broadly. It should just.
So which of the two interpretations then do you adopt?
It should just be interpreted to mean what it says,
in your view?
It was. The holding was that when EPA approves a transfer and characterizes it as a permanent interpollutant transfer, it cannot later recharacterize it as something else without changing the past legal consequences of past actions.
I think Mr. Rosen would call that the broader interpretation of ARCMA.
Well, here's the critical point, it seems to me. To the extent that anybody could advocate an interpretation of ARCMA according to which baseline allowances as such, or the quantity of HCFCs that a company can produce or consume, you know, constitute vested rights that can't be interfered with without due process or retroactively or otherwise. That just seems to us a completely untenable interpretation of the decision. Arkema doesn't say that, and in fact, it seems to me, as I've said, it's quite clear to take care to say just how limited its holding is. So we agree that.
But your limit, just so I can nail this down, your interpretation of it is not limited, as Mr. Rosen had interpreted it, based on the precise communications at issue in the Arkema case, or is it? He had talked about if you.
No, I mean, there are two aspects to Arkema. The first question was, what was it that EPA did when it approved these transfers?
Right.
And the court said, we're looking at the things that are in the record, the documents, and we're interpreting them to mean that what EPA did was approve permanent interpollutant transfers that would be carried forward into the next regulatory period if EPA chose to continue with the same sort of system. That was the first aspect of the case. The other aspect of the decision, what it said was the holding that you can't do that without violating retroactivity principles. You can't change your position. You can do that prospectively, but you can't do it retroactively. And we, you know, obviously agree that on the merits, petitioners' principal submission, in fact, virtually all of their submissions, are simply inconsistent with Arkema. Arkema decided that EPA has both the statutory and the regulatory authority to approve permanent interpollutant transfers. It decided that EPA had determined to do that before the approvals at issue here. Just about any aspect of any of these various challenges that are raised by petitioners here fly right into the teeth of Arkema, it seems to us. That, of course, is a merits argument. We don't think the court should get there, because the one and only opportunity to challenge these transfers was in connection with the interim final rule, which is something petitioners tried to do but did too late.
So I'm sorry to belabor this point, but I want to be clear what intervener's position is. As to the interpollutant allocations that you have to carry forward per Arkema, had EPA proposed for, in the notice of proposed rulemaking for the 2012-14 period, not to carry those forward, then you would be arguing, well, that's contrary to Arkema.
We would be arguing it's contrary to the Arkema decision only if the system that was put into place in the final rule was the same one or a similar one to what was in place before, because that, after all, is the holding of Arkema, that if you...
Oh. What about the following period, 2015 to 2020?
Right. I think unless it may well be that they're going to be completely phased out by then. I can't recall specifically whether that's
true. We can take a hypothetical situation. That's why I'm trying to understand how EPA's, even in its narrower reading of Arkema, says, well, it was based on the specific communications between the parties. All right, so it decided for the 2012-2014 period to leave your clients' allocations as they were and decrease the percentages for other parties in the market, presumably deciding that Arkema forced its hand if it stayed with this regulatory approach. And I just want to be clear, your position is that's true, and as I understand, the logic of your position would be it would be true forever in the future.
That's right. If there is a future regulatory period, 2015 to whatever, and there is a baseline allowance system in place, Arkema, we think, requires that Arkema and Solvay's permanent interpollutant transfers be carried forward. Now, to be sure, EPA has decided that in the future, permanent interpollutant transfers can't be made, so we can't make any more of them. But the ones that we made and that were approved would have to be carried forward so long as EPA employs the same or a similar system.
And how is that consistent with the Montreal Protocol?
Well,
I just want to be clear how that works.
The way that EPA controls the total output is through the percentage multipliers.
Yeah, but we're going towards zero.
That's right. And as the percentage multipliers can approach zero, and there will come a point as to each chemical at some point in the future when they'll be phased out completely and the percentage will go to zero, in fact.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. All right. Counsel for petitioners.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have two quick points and then one thought on a path through the thicket for the court here. The two quick points are first on injury and on ripeness. The petitioners certainly concede that we had no injury and that the claims here were not ripe until the Arkema panel had handed down its decision. Mr. Rosen is incorrect that the injury didn't begin until the 2011 interim final rule. Shortly after the Arkema panel decision, EPA issued an enforcement discretion letter, which then and there changed the dynamics of the marketplace.
All right, but allocated, EPA points out you don't challenge those.
We didn't challenge the enforcement discretion letters?
Yeah.
Well, they're not the actual injury. The 2008 transfers were, setting aside the even bigger issue of the justiciability under Heckler versus Cheney and other cases of exercises of enforcement discretion. What we're being injured by today is the 2012 enforcement discretion letter. That's the evidence of the injury. But the competitive standing under Shirley versus Sibelius and a variety of other cases demonstrate that our injury occurred when fundamentally the competition, the barrier to competition or the competitive market was disrupted by the Arkema decision. Second, it's hard to interpret the Arkema panel decision for anything other than the proposition that all baseline allowance holders have vested rights that cannot be retroactively diminished by EPA if based on nothing more than the venerable legal proposition that what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. We think it's going to be very difficult for EPA to read that decision narrowly.
So you think EPA's, what they're proposing here is the narrower interpretation of Arkema really can't be squared with the decision?
It does not seem that way. We obviously haven't seen some alternative regime that they've come up with. They've not proposed one. There's no imminent evidence of an imminent application of one, but we're not seeing how they're going to be able to work their way through that at this point.
Are you ready for the path through the thicket?
Here's the path through the thicket. Listening to counsel for respondent and interveners and the questions from the court, I'm wondering whether we're all misreading Arkema to a certain extent. We've posited that there's a principle called the phase down follows the pollutant principle, which would preserve both all of the baseline that was transferred by Arkema and Solvay and not disrupt that transfer, but still permit EPA to phase down that transferred baseline according to the phase down of the transferred chemical, which was HCFC-142B, rather than the transferee chemical, which was HCFC-22. Were the court to clarify here that the Arkema decision allows that proposition, allows EPA to take that action, then our injury would be reduced by 99.53% to essentially a de minimis level. So for all these reasons, we think the 2008 transfer should be vacated and remanded to EPA, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.